this pilot's in an interesting position here. He's certainly not on a check ride. There's nobody looking over his shoulder to see whether he's being legal or making the right call. It's kind of about, you know, what kind of self-discipline you have because you're managing this situation. And I think in this scenario, the classroom answer would err on the side of safety. But most pilots in this situation are going to be very inclined to probably do the wrong thing.
I agree, Bob. The pilot sets his own standards. And as you say, nobody's looking over his shoulder now except his non-pilot friends. And as a pilot, you need to make a decision. Either you are or you're not going to follow the rules. And if a pilot says, I can break this rule a little bit, I can crank it around and find the runway, or I can go down another 100 feet, I'm better than the rules. And often a pilot will do that and get away with it, which then leads them to do something even more egregious later on. So I think as pilots, we have to make a decision. Either we will or we'll not follow the rules. And clearly, there's some very clear rules to keep us safe on circling approaches if you follow them.
There are, but as we talked about in the discussion phase, there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of variables. It's a very, very busy time. So it's very, very important, and as we'll, you know, and we'll certainly talk more about planning ahead to try to simplify this complex maneuver and be well ahead of the airplane as opposed to behind it.
One of the ways a pilot can simplify that is to think that through before he starts the approach and review what he really needs to see and make a decision before he starts the approach that if he doesn't see it, he's going around so that he doesn't have to try to fly the airplane and make that decision down there where it's the weather's bad and he's close to the obstacles.
And a very, very dangerous aspect to this that we have to think about, and we have to remember this on all flights, is that get-home-itis, tremendous killer of pilots. This is his home airport. They're going home. And somehow, we all believe as pilots that, you know, that we can do it. We can accomplish something at home station that we wouldn't do at an out airport. I know the landmarks, okay? I know what the parameters are here, but I know how to get this airplane on the ground here. And many, countless fatalities occur in a scenario just like this one.
Bob, this pilot is encountering unforecasted weather at his home airport, and that clearly is something that could have been avoided here. Weather, yes, it's unforecasted, but this pilot had an hour where he could have got a weather update as to what was going on in the Lansing area, and I'm sure that would have indicated that things may have been coming down a little bit faster than forecasted earlier. So that, to me, indicates the planning for the approach or arrival, you know, actually continues throughout the flight. There's all kinds of resources available via flight watch, listening to ATIS's, AWAS frequencies to get an idea of what's going on. Now, again, the planning on the arrival left something to be desired. This pilot is 7 miles from the Lansing Airport, which is the capital city airport of Michigan, equipped with ILS approaches, a good FBO. The sensible thing to do once it looked like things were going downhill a little bit would have been to go to Lansing, land, get a ride from the FBO or certainly from a taxi. It's just a short ride over to Grand Ledge. That's if the pilot didn't plan before the weekend started to leave a car over there just in case. So his home airport, the destination airport on the return trip, is not a well-equipped airport in terms of approaches. And you want to keep that in mind. If you're planning to land at this type of airport, your options are relatively limited on the approach. Nothing is really lined up with a runway. If approach is necessary, you're going to do a circle to land, and that requires some review. There's no way in this case that pilot could have kept this runway in sight throughout the circle that I could see. All he had was maybe a glimpse of the runway. 91-175 indicates you must distinctly have the runway in sight to continue the circle to land maneuver. And that's a tough maneuver to start with. And we know here that we're looking at clouds right around the circling minimum altitude, which this is not a good way to proceed here.
Let's place ourselves in the cockpit. And sure enough, that instinct, that urge, the pilot's focus on, you know, on getting the job done, landing at destination. And we know it's an overpowering feeling within us to do just that. And I really think, you know, in a really idealistic world, especially in light of the weather, you say to the gang before the flight, gang, our cars are at Lansing. The weather is not real pure. We can legally go down, take a look. If the weather's good, we see the airport, we're going to land. But what we're probably going to do is go down there, take a look. We're going to go missed approach, and we're going to go over to Lansing and take a cab back to get our cars, okay? Yeah. And then, you know, you've changed the pressure dramatically from, okay, we're going to stuff this airplane in here to, okay, we're going to fly an instrument approach. We're not going to do anything dangerous, remotely dangerous. But the fact is, once that passenger calls the runway in sight back behind you, you know, you're getting sucked in here.
You definitely are getting sucked in.
And once you turn that airplane, it's not going to be a 30-degree bank to get back to the airport. You're going to be a 45-degree bank at low altitude and low airspeed. And the next thing you know, I don't want to go there. It's just an awful, awful scenario, and it will happen just like that.
I take the passenger's report with a grain of salt. Passenger's not really qualified to identify the airport. What is the passenger looking at? Is that really the airport?
Had the pilot made that briefing to his passengers, it might have changed his mindset as well. So it's not only for the passenger's benefit, but he's announced what he's going to do and what his standards are, and he would be less likely to change that decision now with a last-minute glimpse of some runway lights or cars on the street or whatever they saw down there.
And another hook that could be out there for the pilot on this, once again, you're at home airport, when do you descend to MDA? On this approach, you know, if you look at the resources here, you'll see the pilot can legally descend down to MDA, but as he's doing that, he's crawling along 300 feet above obstacles, looking for the airport, very distracted. How easy would it be to go, you know, below this 300 feet criteria where now you're down in a very, very dangerous situation, and you just got to common sense ask yourself, why am I doing this? As Bob said, Lansing Airport, you know, is 7 miles away, and here we out here doing one dumb move after another. And yet, at home station, hey, I know where these towers are. I know, you know, I'm comfortable down here in my home environment, and I've gotten away with it before. And you talk about this regulatory creep, Wally. Mm-hmm. You know, at an airport like this, no one's going to watch you. No one's going to see if you're below minimums. Yeah, at a big airport, somebody might turn you in for busting minimums, but not out here.
You know, that's a very interesting point you make, Bob. Along the final segment of the final approach course, there are two obstacles. One's 1,048 feet. The other's 1,025 feet. And the MSL minimums on this approach are 1,400 feet.
Exactly.
So that's just barely in excess of that 300-foot margin.
And what's interesting also, and we didn't really talk about it, is the visibility. The visibility required for the circling approach is 1 mile. You think about how hard it is to keep something in sight while you're flying the airplane, essentially visual reference to the ground with only 1 mile of visibility. The latest special, the visibility was 1.25 miles, which is essentially a mile when you're talking about that low of visibility and with an estimate. So now you're looking through a windshield when it's raining, an airplane that may or may not even have windshield wipers, and you're trying to keep something in sight with 1 mile. How many pilots can fly a traffic pattern on a good VFR day and stay within 1 mile? I mean, we routinely see people flying light airplanes 1 mile, 1.5 miles final in a normal traffic pattern. So now the pressure is on you even more, because if you go outside of 1.25 miles, not only have you left the circling protected airspace, you're also probably going to lose sight of the runway because that's your visibility limit.
And how about the basic skills, you know, just to fly a normal circling approach, okay? A lot of people, you know, are so used to flying their bomber patterns. You restrict them to 1.3 miles. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a tight pattern for them. And once again, you take a pilot and tell him to fly the traffic pattern 200 feet low, I'll bet you he overshoots final.
Yeah.
So there are some inherent challenges here for a pilot to accomplish. And as I said, we just don't practice circling approaches and go out and do them very often. And here we are now trying to do it with pressure, with weather, and the odds are staggering against us.
You know, it's a task to train a pilot to do a stabilized approach to the runway from a standard traffic pattern. Yep. Now we're talking about for a pattern that at MDA minimums is 600 foot above the surface. And we're trying to stay close. We're trying to keep the speed under control. We're trying to minimize our bank and comply with the regulation, which says you don't leave that 600-foot MDA until you are in a position to land using normal maneuvers. Now, you mix all of that together, and you've got a real difficult situation here, particularly if it's raining or you have bumps and crosswinds to contend with. it's a tough combination to deal with if you haven't practiced this.
Well, we talked often about, you know, your standards in the airline for a stabilized approach.
Yeah.
Definitionally, you cannot fly a stabilized approach on this. You're not going to be aligned with the runway on your airspeed where you're supposed to be. I mean, you can't get there from here.
Bob, I remember doing circling approaches at the airline in jet airplanes, trying to fly a pattern at 600 feet with a jet airplane. It was crazy, and I'm delighted that we gave that up as a thing to do.
And that's to a long runway that probably has some pretty good pavement markings and approach light system and threshold lights and all that. This airport, we got a little country airport basically with just medium intensity runway lights. We're overhead the airport. They're directional. They go the other way. So we don't even really have a good look at that. We've got a set of reels on one end, and that's about it for all our visual guidance.
Well, and how about this? You know, we didn't set this scenario to occur at night, but how does this scenario even get horrific if we think about it at night? I know back at Westover where I flew for many, many, many years, you know, we had a 11,000-foot runway. Well, the cross runway, if the winds were, you know, were strong out of the northwest, gave us a circling approach to runway 33, dark hole off the approach end of 33. So I go from an 11,000-foot runway that has instrument lights up the wazoo, you know, to a dark hole approach to a runway with nothing off the approach end. I mean, same airport environment. So the variables are just tremendous, Bob.
And another important point is commonly found in the operating restrictions for passenger-carrying operators is that they cannot conduct a circling approach when the weather is less than 1,000-foot ceiling and 3 miles visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you a little bit more reasonable kind of parameters to operate in.
And that's a two-pilot trained crew
professional
in a turbine-powered airplane with
– Who practices
a maneuver in a simulator with a ground proximity warning system and all the stuff that you got. And it shows in the NTSB files, just a quick excerpt, shows that over and over and over again we see the findings. Pilot's failure to follow the missed approach procedure while landing with a low ceiling. Pilot's failure to maintain altitude distance from obstacles during an IFR circling approach. Pilot's failure to follow the instrument approach procedure. Pilot's failure to maintain clearance with terrain. It's over and over and over again.
Yeah.
If you look at this specific approach procedure and many, many approach procedures, if you don't see the airport until the published missed approach point, you know, most pilots cannot land from that point.
Yeah.
So it's legal to fly to the missed approach point, see the airport and land, but physically many, if not most pilots are going to be challenged to get the airplane on the ground safely from the missed approach point.
With 1 mile visibility.
With 1 mile visibility. And while in this case here, this is a perfect example.
Well, one of the tools I use in briefing myself for a circling approach is to look at that airport diagram. And if you look at that on a circling approach, there'll be a little arrow and a little barb showing you the way you're going to approach the airport, assuming you're on course. And that helps you at least mentally decide what you're going to have to do to set up your pattern. If you look at this particular approach, and if you intend to make a left downwind for runway 27 here, you're joining it having to make about a 110-degree turn to start with rather than the 45-degree turn that we would normally make. And if you're going to make a half a mile downwind, you're going to have to see the airport at least a mile away. In our scenario, the pilot is already past the runway when he sees it, so there's no way he's going to make a left downwind from that position.
When you look at this thing, okay, if I spot the airport here, I'm going to make a left pattern. If I spot it here, I'm going to make a right pattern. So, I mean, you really literally have to be prepared for a multitude of different approaches to the airport, one keeping the airport on the non-flying side, one keeping it on the pilot side, with winds, you know, blowing you around, and then, you know, you may very well set yourself up for landing with a tailwind. Wouldn't that be a pleasant surprise to find out you got 10 knots, you know, on the tail? And how does that affect your landing performance?
Oh, boy.
Surprise, surprise.
And this is not an extra long runway in this case.
No. And it's raining.
And you're probably going to be carrying extra speed because, you know, as you're configuring, as you're maneuvering, boy, the last thing you want to do is be low and slow.
So you're high and fast on a wet runway, which is only 3,200 feet long.
Yeah. So I know it sounds like we're scaring the heck out of people with regard to circling approaches, but yeah, well, they're legal. You really have to have your eyes wide, wide open on what you're getting into. And without extraordinary preparation and a real good plan, you're just not going to make it happen.